point of the UN Climate Summit is to try to create an international rule book to make it easier to implement promises that countries made in Paris 3 years ago. So sorting things out like how to measure and to verify cuts to greenhouse gas emissions. Ethan Zindler from Bloomberg New Energy Finance is here. Ethan, nice to speak to you.
Thanks for having me.
Why, I guess, first of all, is this level of detail so tough to negotiate?
Well, it's sort of there are really two sides to it. If you're a developing country, you don't necessarily like the idea of somebody being in your own backyard monitoring exactly what you're doing and your activities. You would like the world to believe that you are doing the right thing based on what you tell them. You don't necessarily want a third-party verification system or anybody sort of poking around through your garbage to make sure that you are actually living up to the promises that you made. And on the wealthier countryside, the pledge that was made at Paris was to invest $100 billion a year, essentially, from wealthier to less developed countries. And on their side, they don't really love the idea of having a system set up and the mechanisms that are easily monitorable either.
It can get a little bit depressing, though, right? I mean, in October, there was a report out that said CO2 emissions need to be cut by 45% by 2030 just to restrict a temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. We know that the Paris Accord doesn't even take effect until 2020, at which point the U.S. has said it plans to withdraw. It's kind of easy to think that this is all too little too late.
It is certainly easy to feel overwhelmed by this, the size of the challenge involved in all of this. We see the immediate consequences of climate change around us in the form of major hurricanes that we've suffered here in the U.S. in the last couple of years, the wildfires out in California, and there's really no sign that that's going to necessarily get any better. So there are always tangible sort of proof that we're now living with climate change, and then, of course, there are these scientific findings that suggest that we're very much on the wrong path. So that can be very, very disheartening, but we like to think that we at Bloomberg NEF have some positive news, which is just about the progress that we've seen around clean energy technologies.
The other point to make is that although adding capacity is one thing, sort of replacing existing fossil fuel capacity is another. How are countries doing on that front?
So first, I mean, when you're talking about adding new capacity, in many cases, in many countries now, clean energy is the lowest cost option. And so I think that in itself is great news and worth stopping and pausing and celebrating for just a moment. But you're right. The challenge then is about displacing existing generation. So in India and China, for instance, they built about 430 gigawatts of coal capacity since the start of this decade. To put that in context, we have about 250, 260 gigawatts of capacity online in the United States. So they built way more than the entire U.S. coal fleet in just 7 years. And those are new coal plants. And they are not going to be keen to stop running them anytime soon. And those are CO2 emissions that we can look to the future as continuing and a real challenge.
Just very quickly, though, Ethan, I guess to get back to this idea of the good news. So the Bloomberg New Energy Finance studies show that emerging markets are leading the transition to new clean energy. That's good news. There are also opportunities, I think, for a number of commodities producers, not just renewable energy, but, metals and batteries, agriculture. What kind of research have you guys done to show where the economic opportunities are?
So first, we try to look at the actual costs of the technologies, and those have been coming down very dramatically, so much so that these technologies are increasingly cost competitive without subsidies. But putting aside any sort of theoretical look at the economics, in the real world, in terms of the activities that we're seeing, about two-thirds of all the zero-carbon energy that got built in 2017 were built in developing countries, not in wealthy countries. The majority of new capacity that was added in developing countries was from wind and solar, not from dirtier forms of generation. So they're making those decisions largely based on the economics, and we're seeing the actual events take place on the ground. So that's very positive news, I would say, overall. The question really, though, as you alluded to earlier, is what's the point at which these technologies are sufficient that they can displace existing generation? And then, as you also mentioned, in terms of commodities, this does present all kinds of interesting opportunities for those involved in various commodities, in particular when you think around electric vehicles. You need lithium, you need cobalt, you need manganese, you need a bunch of other materials as well that will be required to fuel that growth of that industry.
Ethan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's what we're watching this week in commodities in Toronto. I'm Danielle Bokov.